The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange generates high-quality leads at scale, helping you find your next ideal customer. Episode 2, recorded live at Advertising Week New York, features Mary Cirincione, Vice President, Propeller Group, in conversation with Justin Cook, Chairman of Demand Exchange.
Mary Cirincione from Propeller, welcome to Advertising Week New York's podcast, Business of Marketing. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an exciting addition to the week.
So first of all, just give me a bit of a snapshot of your background, career journey to date. How did you get to where you are today?
Absolutely. Well, I'm a proud Hoya. I graduated from Georgetown just in time for the financial crisis. Quite a few years ago, and went into strategic communications consulting for the federal government down in DC. I did that for about 6 or 7 years, and over the course of that experience, I decided to return to one of my original loves, which was journalism and media. So I went and got my master's from Northwestern in journalism. It's a year-long intensive program. I reported everywhere from Chicago to New York to Pakistan, actually. And, you know, during that experience, on the outside of that experience, I was going to go, you know, straight into media. Actually, that was the grand hope, was to jump, you know, head on into a magazine. And the situation, the journalism industry was continuing to be very shaky. And I realized, you know what, let me freelance for a little while before I make a commitment. I did that for a year and ended up creating a hybrid career for myself. Sort of blending together, you know, my previous experience in strategic communications consulting and my love for media, my, you know, now proficiency, you know, in all things journalism, and decided to do a bit of consulting on my own. I then went agency and just, you know, found myself in PR, truly. And so for the last 6 years or so, I've been doing B2B PR agency side. I was in-house at Getty Images for about 3 years. And 2 years ago, after quite a few conversations with Propeller, they had, you know, they were already serving clients in the B2B space in London, and they'd seen a need and a desire for some joined up programs, and they wanted to put down roots in the US, and they weren't sure how to do that. And a former client of mine from Wolf Olins, who's now a partner there, had said, you know what, we need Mary. We need someone like Mary. And after a couple of conversations, I said, you know what, why not jump into a startup of sorts, right, within an established entity? And so that's how we founded Propeller US just about 2 years ago.
Wow, what a journey, what a story. It's great. Obviously, that background, particularly the sort of the mix of strategic comms and, and journalism, that obviously has very much kind of shaped how you perhaps think about sort
Absolutely.
Of marketing media. Tell us a little bit about some of the kind of the way that you kind of approach marketing from that point of view.
So for me, everything is about storytelling and narrative, right? So everything, you know, message is incredibly important. You know, whether it's, you know, for our own company, for Propeller, or for the clients that I work with, I spend a lot of time on message, right? What do we need to say, and how does that differ based on the audience that you're trying to target and talk to? Because there are significant, you know, shifts and changes. You know, if you're talking about something internally, right, it's one way of saying it, and I've got some, you know, internal comms experience as well. But it's not always totally different from how you might approach that, you know, with external stakeholders and media, right? There's this need to simplify that message, to create a story that demonstrates why someone should care and why it matters to them as well, right? So my approach, you know, my recommendation in terms of what I do with my clients is to figure that out and become very comfortable with how to simplify that. And make sure that whoever you're talking to understands it, because that's the other thing, right? If they don't comprehend, they don't grasp it, you've done a lot of nothing. So how do you simplify it and create the, you know, that moment of why should I care and why should I, you know, hear what you're saying to me?
I love that. And taking the storytelling kind of concept, you mentioned just the differing audiences, internal, external, and so on. How do you think about sort of translating that story into content and doing so in a kind of integrated way?
Absolutely. So, you know, obviously it goes back to that message. And then from there, I think about the channels and the avenues that each of those audiences are going to care about, right? So, you know, I'm a very firm believer in the power of LinkedIn, and I think it's a great platform to get your message out there, and you can do so in a corporate way, right? So when you think about that content, yes, you know, your business page, your business profile is always going to want to push out news. But I always think back to the thought leader, back to the leadership, right? I think the news should start with them. And that gives you the opportunity to speak in a personal way, right? So you can, you know, you can use that first person tone of voice, and you can express perhaps a bit more emotion than you might have in a traditional, you know, company post or a blog post or whatever you might do on your website. So I tend to lean into that, you know, again, why should I care? And if it's somebody talking about that, you know, using that platform of a LinkedIn post, they're just able to express that in very simple ways, right? Same as with, you know, whatever other channel they might be using, you know, whether it's X or, you know, some of my businesses are very, you know, heavy Instagram users. I tend to opt for the more conversational. I think that we are so inundated by media and content every day of our lives that when things are a bit stiff or they're impersonal, we have filters up and we just don't grasp them in the same way. But when we, I do believe that we are somehow attuned to something, to hear something in perhaps more, you know, sincere terms, when we know it's coming from a person, when it's coming from a human, when we hear, I care, I believe, we do this, right? I'm also a firm believer in using as many active verbs as you can. you've got to demonstrate that action as well. And I think, again, that's because we just naturally clue into that, and we can sense that passion. So, you know, again, when it comes to content, I try to steer my clients to use their own platforms and to speak from the heart. It doesn't mean that you don't, you know, do a grammar check or you don't sense check that, of course, with, you know, whatever the powers might be at your organization. But I do think there's no substitute for being able to share something in your own words.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because you're talking about being both authoritative but also authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So bring that to life for me. Tell me a little bit about some of the work you're doing that reflects that.
Absolutely. I talked about my passion for storytelling. First and foremost, I am a reporter editor at heart. That will never change. One of the things that, you know, that our agency is uniquely, you know, able to provide is a journalistic sense or approach to the kinds of contributed content that we might pursue on our clients' behalf. So I recently worked with a design client to place a byline with Fast Company. And this was something that, you know, she had brought to me as a topic, and, you know, she wanted to talk about what's wrong with the mammogram experience. It's October, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and, you know, it's a very poorly designed experience for women. It comes with a lot of stigma. And there's real research that shows that the more women that get screened early, the more lives we can save. So she said, this is the rough idea. How do we bring this to life? And we had a brainstorm. We talked through, you know, what that might look like as a contributed piece, a byline. Some people use the term op-ed. I don't, because I feel like it should be firmly rooted in experience and in expertise, not an opinion. So we took that to Fast Company. Fast Company loved the idea of it. That piece eventually went live actually just last week. But that was 3 months in the making, just figuring out that messaging. And, you know, I served as, you know, co-author and editor in that. Then when it came time, how do we get that out into the world? And I think this is what you're going to find interesting.
Mm.
So we had another strategy session around that. And I said, you know what I want is I want the piece to go live on Fast Company's LinkedIn. And then I want you to share that on your platform. And I want you to add that topper, as I would put it, that additional layer that shows the context, shows the passion. She is a woman, and I feel like she would, you know, this would be fine for me to say on her behalf. For, you know, her life has been impacted directly by breast cancer in terms of her loved ones. So she was able to explain why she wanted to write this, why it's so important. She made a strong call to action, right? Because again, when we talk about thought leadership, it's not enough to provide or to put ideas out into the world. You need to inspire others to do something, right? There's something. They either need to change the way they think, they need to change the way they act, or they need to, you know, do something extra, right? So she was able to create that top layer, you know, and just add that call to action. And it was probably about 200 words or so. And then she pushed that out with the piece. And I think, again, the piece on its own is beautiful. But with that added context, it becomes so much more poignant. And that is something that she's uniquely able to provide. Then her agency also shared that post, right? And then they maximized it from there. But again, you know, when it comes to owning that message, it was hers. These were her ideas. So having it stay close to her, I think, was important.
That's fascinating. And you started to kind of, I suppose, lay down some of the kind of the blocks to a journey there in terms of how you're starting to kind of connect up those channels. Unpack that a little bit more. So tell me a little bit more about sort of how you and Propeller think about the kind of the overarching B2B customer journey.
In terms of the customer journey, yeah. So, and this is actually interesting. So when we approach contributed content, I always suggest, you know, to my clients, think about the clients you want to work with. What would you say to them? How would you frame that, right? And, you know, I'm the first one to suggest name drop that brand. If there's a brand doing it well, but you think they could do more and you want to work with them, weave them into the piece in a thoughtful way. Even tag them in your LinkedIn post, right? If there's a brand doing it wrong, but you want to help them fix it, tag them. But be thoughtful in a provocative way, right? So a balance of the two. So I'd say when it comes to that B2B customer journey, always be thinking with every piece of content that you're putting out there, who are you talking to, right? So again, it goes back to audience and stakeholders. And, you know, if this piece of thought leadership made it out to the exact audience that you want to, you know, you want to reach, what would you want them to do? What would you want them to think about, right? So ideally, you want them to get a feel, a sense for the kinds of strategic thinking that they might get from working with you as a partner, right? Or, you know, the creative, innovation or the approach, whatever that might be. Again, you know, we work with agencies and businesses across the spectrum from, you know, traditional ad land to tech. So whatever that is, really think about that with them in mind. So it's not salesy though, right? But you're almost giving them a taste for if they were to work with you, what they could expect from that experience. And I think that that's so important because putting something out into the world, again, if there's no call to action, if you don't find a way for it to resonate with the appropriate parties, you've just lost a moment and you've spun your wheels, right? So you do really need to be thinking about that. And again, if I go back to this example of that Fast Company byline, it's this idea that, you know, and she and I talked about this, who do you want to work with? Do you want to work with General Electric, right, who maybe designs the machines? Do you want to work with, you know, the hospitals that are designing these, you know, these clinics and these screening rooms? And the answer was probably all of them. So how do you kind of weave them in a natural way? So always be thinking about the current customers you have, right? How do you, you know, clue them into what you're doing now and just who you might want to work with in the future?
It's really interesting. You kind of talked a little bit about the audience already in this conversation. So let's just unpack that a little bit because, you know, B2B, you know, the buying committee, how do you kind of then reflect what you've sort of already talked about against sort of specific members of the buying committee, I suppose? And how does that, I guess, add another complexity, the stage of where you are in that journey as well?
Of course. You know, one of the, again, when we kick off with a client, one of the first, you know, I ask a lot of questions. Again, I'm a reporter at heart. But one of the first dozen or so is going to be, who are your decision makers, right? Are they the CMOs? Are they, you know, are they marketers or are they adjacent, right? So if you're, again, if you're in the tech space, are they, you know, you're talking to a VP of product or something like that, CTO. And I think when you think about audience, okay, you need to reflect on that. But you also need to think where they consume, right? So, you know, I've had oftentimes I've had a client who, you know, I have several clients who, you know, do a lot in the retail space. And they say, what's better for me, right? Do I want to be in a retail publication or do I want to be in, you know, a trade, right? An ad trade. And I say, all right, well, who do you want to talk to? Well, marketers in general. All right, well, if we can reach a bigger audience of marketers at the ad trades, that's where you want to be. Well, yeah, but we still want to talk about retail. You can do that there, right? So, and again, none of these are exclusive, right? But again, the approach would be different. So the level of, we talk about messaging, to kick it back there, the level of nuance that you can get in if you're speaking to a retail vertical publication, right? You can be very detailed because you're going to assume some general awareness around what you're talking about. If you're in a business publication or an ad trade, you're going to maybe simplify it a little bit, right? You're going to perhaps hook it onto something. You know, it could, you know, we're, let's see, it's October, so we're gearing up. We just had Prime Day, and then we're going to gear up for Black Friday and holiday shopping and all of that. So, you know, you can hook it to some of those bigger trends, and you know that these publications are going to be amping up their coverage around those elements anyhow. You know, in terms of, you know, the audience and how do you dissect that, one of the things that I always think is, think about how you got your last client. Where'd they come from, right? You know, word of mouth referrals, of course, very powerful. But then you've got to go, you've almost got to go further down the line. Well, where did that other client come from, right? And, you know, if perhaps somebody that you worked with, you know, or you met at a conference and then you posted a piece to your LinkedIn or, you know, a provocation to your LinkedIn, and then they reconnected with you, right? That's the most important thing to figure out when you're looking at that customer journey. How are you interacting with people, right? And, you know, how did they find their way to you? You know, presence at a conference like this is, of course, incredible from a networking standpoint. But it's, again, how do you use it? Right. So if you've met a couple of people on the ground today that you want to work with, why not do a post about it? Talk about them on LinkedIn. Right. So you can create your own content in a lot of ways, too. And I know I'm going off on tangent a bit, but the thought just occurred to me that you've just created a moment to also create some kind of memorability around yourself. Right. So reach out. Use that. Don't just add them on LinkedIn. Then connect with a follow up. I enjoyed your panel. I enjoyed your talk. You know, I bumped into you, you know, in line at the Netflix. You know, the Netflix pop-up, and we talked about X. Create those kind of clues so that if and when you have news in the future, you can push that out to them.
Yeah, you're building connections. I love that. And you're not going off topic at all. This is pure gold.
Yeah.
Certainly is for me. And talking about gold.
Yes.
There's data everywhere, mm-hmm. and you've mentioned X and you've mentioned LinkedIn already. Tell me a little bit about how you and Propeller like to use data and insights to help drive kind of your objectives.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so to be fair, I tend to kind of keep a distance from some of that data because I'm, you know, still very bogged down and, you know, happily bogged down in day-to-day client work. That's where I want to be. But, you know, we do regroup consistently, especially around an event like this, to talk about, again, the reach that we've had. With our posts, right? So I gave a panel on Monday. You know, there's some strategy to it. It's at the mercy of my schedule, right? When I'm able to post. But you know, I knew that we were going to be, you know, it was going to be a full court press, and we wanted to engage with as many people on the ground here as we could this week. So you know, we put together, to be fair, you know, spreadsheets of the kinds of contacts that we were going to be reaching out to, and then we were refining that throughout the week. Then we're also going to gauge like who, you know, who turned up for some of our events, right? Who do we have live conversations with? So more so on the insights than the data. But then we also look, you know, to see, well, okay, what comes out on, you know, on the back of this, right? You know, how many one-on-one meetings do we have? How many conversations do we have with current clients, right? Where we're, you know, kind of ensuring that, you know, we're all set for 2024, because that's also part, you know, I always say everyone thinks when you talk about the customer journey, yes, you need to always be focused on new business and outreach. You need to be focused on retention as well, especially during an economic situation that we're in. Without retention, you know, you can sink yourself very quickly. And you know, I tend to perhaps place a more significant emphasis on retention. And how do I refine and build out and maybe even expand some of those current relationships as well? You know, and those are very important to me in these face-to-face moments. You know, I have a lot of clients that aren't based in New York, but they come into town for this. Mm-hmm. So just making time there as well. So that's another thing that actually that's a stat that I do provide, you know, back to our team is, all right, you know, how many of those face-to-faces did we have with current clients? What did those look like? How many in-person gatherings did we create for either, you know, panels, right, at Advertising mm-hmm. Week so that our clients were speaking, but also, you know, face-to-faces with reporters too. So again, it's a little more fluid on my end, but you know, I would say that from an insight standpoint, it's incredibly important. You need to gauge the success of an event like this.
100% agree. Bird mm-hmm. in the hand and nurturing those relationships is often underlooked, and completely agree. And that's a really nice segue actually into the wider, I suppose, question, which is around evaluating kind of really what success is. Yes. What are the metrics and KPIs that you and Propeller kind of tend to kind of work to?
Absolutely.
When you're working with your clients?
So, you know, we're a little bit interesting in the fact that we do guarantee what we call outputs, but I more so think of them as inputs, right? So whether it's a certain number of, you know, pitch efforts or press releases, you know, for as a pitching tool or campaigns that we're going to drop or speaking gigs, we, you know, on a quarterly basis, we give, you know, a certain level of confidence to our clients that they know that we're going to be achieving, you know, a substantial set, you know, amount of activity together, right? Some of that will begin in one quarter, finish up in another quarter. So we do, you know, look at things from a full year perspective, but we actually do score ourselves against those KPIs. And I think especially when it comes to something like PR, the reality is that it is hard to quantify. Everyone wants to look at share of voice. They want to look at reach. They want to, you know, engagement statistics are terrible. LinkedIn does not feed in to Coverage Book, which is one of the platforms we use. And yet I just told you, you know, ad nauseum how important LinkedIn was, right? So there's a lot of things that aren't quite as joined up as they could be. So what I tend to do is, you know, I have clients who ask for those stats, we provide them, but we also provide the insights piece that goes along with it, right? So we will communicate, okay, well, you'd had this byline in this publication. It then went out in this newsletter that had this number, you know, went to this many inboxes this morning, right? So we'll look at that. We also have great relationships with our reporters and editors. So they're the first to tell us when something that we did was, you know, in the top five that week, right? As far as, because again, these media are looking at clicks. They're looking at reach, right? They're not going to share that publicly, but they will share that with me. So I'll be able to give that feedback back to a client. So that tends to be how I opt to quantify and qualify. The other thing I'd say is that especially at an event like this, if I can earn a panel, if I can earn a spot, you know, it used to be years ago that, you know, in the PR space, you would create an equivalency of what that, you know, if you got a piece, what the advertising equivalency would be, right? If you had to spend for that. I do sometimes, you know, kind of give those comparisons because I think they're helpful. But, you know, if we can earn a panel, you know, at an event versus having to sponsor, you know, again, that's money back in the bank for our clients. So that's another number that I like to, again, compare against. But they're not as, you know, there are no bar graphs. There are the occasional pie charts that will do. But as a rule, I think, you know, again, especially when data is not as readily available, I would say that communication becomes entirely more important, right? So you need to be communicating the efforts along the way. You need to be communicating these different nuances of what kind of reach you had, what the impact was, whatever feedback you got from media. And then you get that back in the hands of the client. And that, again, that's, you know, if you're coupling those insights, perhaps in a situation where you don't have as much data, that's where you create confidence.
And talk about kind of building confidence. How do you think about innovating? We're surrounded by innovation right now. Here we are.
Absolutely.
How do you integrate innovation? How do you do things differently, better, and integrate that into your strategies?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that that I mentioned that we're, you know, quite good at doing at Propeller is we spend a lot of time on that messaging, right? So what we do is we will try to get in our clients' heads, try to figure out, you know, what their stance is on something, what their POV is. Then we'll actually do a bit of pre-written comment, you know, commentary, or even, you know, prep a byline on their behalf. And, you know, yes, it gets, not everyone loves to write, I'll be honest, more often than not, people don't. But what we're able to do is show them that they're not in this on their own, right? We'll get them 800 words or so, maybe 600, and they've got to help us get it to 800. And they will feel like, oh, yeah, they really know me. They've listened to me. And, hey, this sounds pretty good. I wouldn't mind having my name attached to this. And we've just coached them through that process. And I think that's where you create confidence. Then you get that first piece out there, and then it starts to feel better, right? And then, you know, increasingly they're more willing and able to participate in those spokesperson sessions, and they trust those, right? They also, we get to the point where if there's something quick turn commentary, they know that they've spent enough time with us that we can draft something up, they give it quick eyes, and then it goes over. So, you know, when I talk about, you know, my journalistic background, I think being able to almost to embody different tones of voice for different people, right? I learn who they are. I learn about their passion points. And then we're able to weave that in. So again, confidence comes through that. I just had a client do an Amazon ad studio spot this morning. You know, we did a little prep call. We did another, you know, before she took the stage, we walked through some of these ideas and, you know, just conversation is king. Trust yourself. Nothing you can say is, you know, unforgivable, right? So we'll work through it together. So again, I think, you know, confidence is part, you know, being a partner through all of this, truly. That's how we lend that.
So last question. The future, give us a bit of a crystal ball.
You know, yeah.
What is really kind of on your radar right now? How are things changing? What's it look like?
Absolutely. What I'm seeing is more interest from C-suites in embodying, you know, becoming different kinds of thought leaders. I suppose I would frame it that way. So not just talking about the traditional industry speak and what's next for Adland and all these different things, but being more vulnerable. Being willing to tap into something that's perhaps, you know, professionally adjacent to them and weaving that in. So I'm seeing people, you know, C-suites come to life in a new way. And I actually really love that. You know, it used to be that that was more the norm for founders and startups. And I'm seeing, you know, just even at the agencies and the networks that we're seeing some of, you know, a more willingness to embrace that. And I think that's great. You know, the journalist in me thinks, yeah, be you. Be a real person and connect with people on a human level and everything else will fall in.
Really, really interesting. Storytelling, being thoughtful in a productive way. I love C-suites coming to life. I think that's a great way to end this. Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
The Business of Marketing Podcast was brought to you by Demand Exchange, helping you find your next ideal customer.